I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
TikTok, 7 o'clock hour of sports talk here on this January 8th. Fiesta Bowl action going on right now. Miami having a 3-0 lead over Ole Miss there. And went into the break talking about Damon Williams Jr. Possibly staying at Washington. And now we have definitive news. So time now for the latest on LSU football and the transfer portal. Brought to you by the Spirit of First American Bank, a banking tradition since 1910. And Damon Williams Jr. will not transfer, folks. Staying at Washington, the news coming out, he says, "I am fully committed and focused on contributing to what we are building," as he wrote as part of his Instagram post. Meanwhile, Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger saying that Williams and Washington officials, they were in discussions throughout the day about his future. He's going to continue playing there under a one-year, $4 million rev share contract that he signed earlier in the month. Now, if he had left, him or his new school would have owed Washington the value of his deal, the $4 million. Sources were telling Yahoo Sports his new school would also have incurred a reduction in its revenue share pool next year by that amount per house settlement guideline. So it's kind of a soap opera right now with the QB situation for the Bayou Bengals. We'll definitely be staying tuned for the latest on it. The LSU report brought to you by the Spirit of First American, a banking tradition since 1910. Keep up with Lane Kiffin's latest moves and breaking news about LSU football right here on WWL. Getting back into some Saints talks, sideline reporter Jeff Nowak's going to be joining us after the first break, doing a little season review and also a preview of what's ahead for the black and gold, who he thinks could be sticking around and who might not be in black and gold next season. One guy we're hoping does stick around is Cam Jordan, a guy that was, to me, the best first-round pick I've been around since covering this team. Just 15 years so far with the ball club, a 10.5 sack season, led the Saints this year. And, you know, of course, getting up there in age is that speculation of, will he come back for another year in the black and gold? He's fully said that he does want to be back in New Orleans. He's wanted to stay here and wants to remain a part of this Saints team. Between the organization and from fans, Cam spoke to the media in the locker room on Monday and was asked, does he still feel appreciated here?
Absolutely. You've talked about what the city means to me and how I feel about the city, and the city tells me every day. Being out, being able to talk to these schools, being able to, you know, start my foundation here, being able to send kids from Louisiana to colleges, man, I'm overly blessed, and I'm always appreciative of all the opportunities I'm even being put in positions in. In terms of team appreciation, we have one of the best locker rooms. It sucks this year that we didn't, you know, have more success, because even the guys that get added on late, you know, you talk about it's time, or Estimate, I guess is the proper name. Audric has been phenomenal. Evan's been great. You know, Ronnie Bell. Our core guys, you know, you talk about DeMario Davis, you talk about Brian Mazzie, Chase Young, the way he's came on this year. And just the young guys that came through, Jonas Sanker to Quincy Riley, you probably say Jonas leading the charge, Tyler leading the charge. The way that he came on strong last night. There's so many great people in this locker room. He's talking about Ike, Mike. You can go through the gambit. I mean, hell, I miss Rashid Shaheed the moment he left. We had so many good people in this locker room. So to go into this offseason and be in a place that I've never been before, okay, but to leave this locker room in general, that's what hurts the most.
What hurts, too, obviously the Saints had a 6-11 season, missing the playoffs a fifth straight year, but there's been a lot of talk of optimism around the ball club right now going into next year, and even some happiness from the Who Dat Nation. What's Cam think?
There's nothing happy about a losing season. Remorseful, for sure, because, again, great locker room, because we showed promise in the right months. November, December, we didn't lose much if we lost at all, you know, minus this last game. You talk about if you had two plays back from two different games, we're in the playoffs. You know, and when it comes down to that, that's the shit that you're going to think about for the rest of the offseason. But it's got to be there. It adds a chip to the shoulder. You have to be able to dig deep and figure out how to be the best version of you, better than you were the year before.
After being the 24th overall pick for the Saints back in 2011, Cam Jordan has never, ever thought about playing anywhere else.
The moment I got drafted black and gold, I figured I'd not die in gold and black. You know, like, well, however you put it, Cam Jordan and black and gold have been synonymous. And I've always worked to make it, have it stay that way. I love my D-line. Talk about beyond just Chase, Carl Granderson put together one of the craziest stat lines in the world yesterday, and nobody's talking about it. 10 tackles, what was it, 3 TFLs, a sack and a half, an interception, hell, might like, what didn't he do? And that's just the edge room alone. I think we had a 22 tackles tackles between the edge, Chris Rumpf included. The interior D-line, even at half mass as we were yesterday, still created production. Jonah Williams is probably not going to be talked about enough, and it's just his surgence this year. Yeah, we talk about me. I'm going to continue working. I'm probably never going to change my work ethic or my drive or how I like to make fun of the Falcons.
That's why you got to love Cam. Always a playful guy that takes those fun jabs at the opponent. And, you know, that rivalry just helps add a little more tension and that pettiness to it. Looking at the rookie on this team at quarterback, everybody's talking about Tyler Shuck, obviously a lot of hype around him. What is the veteran Cam Jordan's thoughts on the rookie QB?
You know, you got something you can work on the next year. You know, you talk about how he just came in and it you know, it wasn't that Spencer was playing well. And Tyler almost got put in an awkward position and looked like it, he just never looked back. The way he was able to take to the field, and he saw him grow game after game after game after game. And even this last one, it was like interception. Okay, that could rattle some people. Tyler went back there and walked them down himself. Six showed up in a lot of ways. And you love to see that from a young guy, and you just wish you had him back 6 years ago. So I'm like, dang, we got 7 years to grow, you know? And now it's like the closer you get to the end of the tunnel, you're like, man, Every day is more precious than the last. Every game more precious than the last. And it's like, how many more games can I play with a guy like Tyler Shuck? You know, you see a guy like Kevin Banks come in and have the success that he had his rookie year. You've got a young core, Taliese, you know, like a young core that is going to be formidable soon. And you just want to be a part of it.
Cam Jordan, now 36 years old, apologies, you know, looking at to get a contract back with this black and gold bunch for next season. And, you know, 10.5 sack season, double digits, leading the franchise in sacks for this year. He was asked about playing for defensive coordinator Brandon Staley and what that was like.
Different to have as much freedom as you can, as you have in a system like his. Your ability to make plays, you know. So it takes you back to the first defense I was in, when it was like, hey, sometimes you just got to check whoop ass. You know, this one is like, hey, you got liberties. So you can gain more liberties or lose liberties depending on, you know, the outcome. And you love that. You know, you love being able to just ball sometimes.
And we've talked about the Saints, you know, ending the season on positive, winning 4 of their last 5. Unfortunately, obviously not beating those Dirty Birds at the end of the year. But Cam was asked too, do you believe in momentum carrying over to the next year?
Absolutely not. No, you could go 13-3 one season and not make the playoffs the next. I think I did that for rookie to second year. Yeah, I put it in like, you know, your core guys, and you hope not to lose them. You know that in any locker room, you can have guys that want bigger contracts, want whatever it is, and not have the same guys. Some guys that are up for bigger contracts, and there's going to be some teams that are going to see that value. So yeah, you can't take for granted the locker room that you have this year and think that it's just going to be better next year. It could reset and you have to, you know, bring in some toxic energy. Then you have to deal with that. You know, you could reset and find an even better core guy. No locker room is ever going to stay the same. So that's why you got to be blessed enough to be a part of and recognize how great of a locker room this year's was.
That's something, too, I appreciate about Cam Jordan, Charlie, is the fact he's always speaking his mind, speaking the truths. And yet, you know, people talk about that momentum from 1 year carrying over the next, but he brings up a great point of, this is going to be a different roster from next season.
A lot of wisdom in Cam Jordan, and you got to believe him when he says that, you know, momentum may be a little bit overrated. Yes, the Saints are feeling good about themselves, and he also talked about them feeling good about their young core. I think there is something to be said about young players learning how to win, which is a little bit of the inverse of what we were talking about with the Pelicans in the last hour with Nick Friedell, but young players learning how to win at the NFL level I mean, you've heard that from former NFL players that come on the show with us. Mark Schlereth says it all the time. It's like, even though it's not the season that you were hoping it would be necessarily a 6-11 campaign, probably surpassed a lot of expectations around national circles for this team entering the year. But at the same time, being able to win games late and kind of figure out the way to win, it's a little bit underrated there. So I think for what Cam is saying, yes, you know, building momentum may be overrated, but young teams,
a belief at least.
Yeah, a belief in themselves moving forward for that young core that Cam did talk about, I think is still important.
We're going to get into some more Black and Gold talk after the break. Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak will join us. You too can join the conversation here on WWL 504-260-1870 on our talk and text line. Stepping away, coming back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL, folks.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome on back into Sports Talk. We're at the end of the first at the Fiesta Bowl to Miami Hurricanes having a 3-0 lead currently over Ole Miss. Back to some of our Saints talk as we welcome in sideline reporter Jeff Nowak to the radio huddle. Jeff, how you been doing, man?
I'm doing good. Just an honest question. Do you think Lane Kiffin is rooting for Ole Miss right now?
I think so. You want to see your team do well even though you've left and, you know, unfortunate circumstances, but I think that for the team success, it still, you know, makes him look good because it's the program he built.
I suppose. I just think we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. If I'm the Ole Miss fans, I'm strapped. This is about sticking it to Lane. I don't know. I find that interesting. Let's just put it that way.
Man, I know you were on the sidelines for every snap of the Tyler Shuck run as a starting quarterback this year, man. And we've seen the QB, the arm talent on the television. I'm just curious, what was it like watching him operate up close?
Yeah, you know, he didn't look like a rookie out there. And I think that's the most positive thing I can say is he just looked in control. You know, you never got the impression that the moment was too big for him. Even in the games that, you know, and I think it would be easy to kind of look at the bigger picture and forget that there were some rough moments in those games. You know, the Miami Dolphins game, that first half was rough, right? Early on against the Panthers, it was difficult. Against the Falcons early on, it was difficult. Against, the Jets, you know, that was a tough first half too. And what stood out to me the most about Tyler was kind of mistake correction, you know. Why didn't something work? You get back to it later in the game and you get it right. It's just a very mature way that he goes about the game, and perhaps it's because he's an older quarterback. Perhaps he just was able to do a lot of the work that he needed to do while he was kind of sitting and backing up Spencer Rattler. And when he got in there, he did not look overwhelmed one bit. You know, it kind of reminded me of – I remember back when Aaron Rodgers first took over the starting job for the Packers, and I remember watching his first game thinking, oh, this is a rookie in there. Not a rookie, but this is a first-time quarterback in there. You know, he's going to look shaky, and he just didn't. He looked like, from day one, the guy who could be the long-term starter for that team. And I felt the same way when I saw Tyler Shuck get in there. Obviously, against the Rams, it didn't go well, but then you go back and you watch it, and you watch him operate, and you're like, okay, you can work with this. And you just saw that kind of build and build and build. And I'm excited for him. I'm excited for him to have time to kind of step back and get a broader view of how his season went and what he did well, what he didn't do well. Because it's easy to forget these rookies. They've basically been going nonstop since like January 2025 at this point. Like, you go straight from your college season to draft prep to combine. Then you get drafted and you're immediately getting ready for a rookie mini camp and then OTAs. And then you get like a month off before training camp. That's why you talk about the second year leap. And it's a real thing because, you know, it's the first time that these players actually get a moment to kind of breathe the whole rookie season is kind of swimming upstream. And then in year two, you start to feel like an actual professional football player. That's what I've heard from a lot of second year players. And so I think that works doubly at the quarterback position because of all the mental processing that goes with it.
It was definitely awesome to see his progression and the buy-in with, I guess, the players, coaches, everybody being positive at the podium when speaking about the rookie quarterback. From your vantage point, though, was there any like kind of specific moment or a game where you saw like the locker room really buy into Shuck being the guy?
Yeah, you know, that's tough. There were a few moments that kind of stand out, but you know, probably the win in Tampa, right?
And the rain that you got soaked.
Yeah, and you were coming off of back-to-back losses, right? Like, there was a point where this season could have gone, hey, you got that win in Carolina, and then it kind of fell off a cliff, right? You've had a chance to win games, you have a chance to win a game, and you don't get it done. Instead, you, like, find a way, right? And that's what you need your quarterback to do. It's not always going to be perfect. You're going to have ugly circumstances. You're going to have rain. You're going to have mud. But you still got to go find a way to win. Both teams are playing with the same set of circumstances. Which team is going to get it done? And that's what he was able to do, right? Like, you don't draw that game up like, oh, well, we're going to allow three free rushers and Tyler's going to make them all miss and then scamper for 19 yards for the go-ahead touchdown. Like, that's the last way you would have expected or wanted it to go, but he still found a way. And I think, you know, that was the game that DeMario Davis came out afterward and, you know, he was basically saying, like, he's got it. And, you know, that means something, right? Like, I know teams, players are going to try to gas each other up and all that, like they're not going to talk down a player, but you know, you don't get the sense that people are just talking to talk when it comes to Tyler. You get the sense that the defense and his team and his offensive teammates really believe that he's going to get the job done. You know, I talked to Justin Reed after the finale and I asked if that matters. And he's like, of course it matters. Like, you go out there on defense knowing, hey, if I get a stop here and I get the ball back to my offense, they're going to do something with it. And whether they do or not, the belief matters. And I just think that's what you've started to see over the second half of this season. And both sides of the ball, offense and defense, kind of played off of that and were better for it.
Now talking about the head coach, Kellen Moore, his first year. How would you grade his that first season, you know, being on the sidelines, just seeing his demeanor, communication style? You know, it started out with a brutal start to the season, but, you know, able to finish the year at 4-1. 6-11 is nothing great, but overall, just what were your impressions of this season for under Kellen Moore?
Yeah, you know, I'll separate it into two categories for now. Because I think there's two very distinct things about being a coach. Is there's being a head coach and kind of culture building and working with the team throughout the week. And then there's like the in-game game day head coach, especially if you're a play caller. And that's a very different thing, right? Like, they kind of feed off each other, but they're two very, very separate responsibilities. And when it comes to the culture building part of it and kind of getting everyone on board and building the program and finding the right coaches and making the right moves, kind of roster from a roster perspective, I give him an A because I think he did an excellent job at managing the team. You know, you're 1-7, 1-8, and you've still got players kind of doing everything the right way, saying all the right things, you know, showing up on time, being excited about the work. And there's something to be said for that. And I don't think they have the second half of the season they did if not for all of that kind of work he did at the front. You know, what players will tell you, and I think what's very important is, you know, he had the same guy when you're on a four-game winning streak as you did when you were on a four-game losing streak. And that consistency is important to players. Now, the other side of that coin is kind of the game day operations, the play calling, the game management type stuff. And I'd give him maybe like a B-, you know, a passing grade, but room for improvement. I think a couple of moments got away from him. You know, none are coming to mind right now. I don't want to call anything out, but like I felt that there were points where the play calling just felt like it got away from him. You know, the usage of Taysom Hill throughout the season was confusing to say the least. You know, the red zone efficiency was tough, and I think play calling played a part in that in a handful of games. You know, the Falcons game in particular comes to mind where, you know, you got into the red zone all those times. You know, Tyler Shuck threw one pass on all of those red zone trips, and you were relying on Taysom Hill as your red zone offense, and it wasn't working. So I don't know if all the right buttons were pressed And there were some close games where maybe that cost you. I think he did get better as the season went on. But I think that's the side of it that I think you can build on that. And that's kind of a first year head coach learning and finding their way. I think it's a lot more difficult for a coach to get the other part if they're not good at that part of the equation and managing the team. I think it's a lot harder to improve there than it is to improve as kind of a game day head coach.
Jeff, the NFL released their players of the month, respectively, for rookies and also just overall players. Matt Stafford wins offensive player of the month. Will Reichard, special teams player of the month. And then, of course, the New Orleans Saints. Chase Young, defensive player of the month. The first time that he's gotten that award since December of 2020 when he was back with Washington. 19 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 5 sacks, 2 fumble recoveries, including the one that was returned for a touchdown against Tennessee, in 5 games for Chase Young, who was just a terror coming off the edge over the final basically month of the season. But really, ever since he got healthy, he was fantastic for this black and gold defense. But just your thoughts on Chase Young. Mike Haas had an awesome interview with him for the Saints Hour where Haas straight up asked him, hey, are you playing the best football of your career right now? And he said yes, and that he had quote-unquote entered his flow state. I thought that was really fascinating. That interview's up on WWL.com. But just Chase Young and his fantastic 2025 campaign after the Saints paid him, money well spent.
Yeah, the funny thing about the last Player of the Month award is it's one of those famous 5-week months, you know, because it actually includes the first week of January too. But I think anyone who watched the end of the season, you know, I think both of these awards are well deserved, right? And I think anyone who watched that 4-game winning streak, which should have been 5, I mean, if you had any offensive playmakers, I think it's 5. But, you know, who led the show? Who led the parade on offense? It was Tyler Shuck. Who led the parade on defense? It was Chase Young. And everyone kind of fed off that. And, you know, you just saw him impact games more and more as the season went on. I thought the first couple games back, he was kind of getting his feet under him. You know, it's tough when you miss that much time. He was really good in camp. You know, we watched him all throughout camp and practice. And I was really excited to see how he was going to impact the games week 1, week 2, week 3. And then he wasn't there, and you lost these really frustrating close games, and you did it while really struggling to get off the field, not just on third down, but on third and long. And when you're struggling on third and long, it's most often because you're not generating a pass rush, because those are the downs where the other team's going to have to drop back, they're going to have to hold the ball, they're going to have to execute longer plays, run longer routes to get past the line to gain. And that's a defensive end and edge rusher's dream. Well, in those games, Chase Young wasn't there. You weren't able to generate enough pressure. And, you know, Mac Jones, Kyler Murray, whoever else, they were able to pick you apart. And later in the season, when you had Chase and you got in those situations, that's where you were able to eat a little bit. It was a 3-year, $51 million contract. And at the time, it was like, okay, well, if you can get the Chase Young that everyone knows is in there, you got a 26-year-old just entering his prime, and you just bought basically his prime for well below market rate at the edge rusher position. Like, if you think that's a $17 million a year is a big-time defensive end contract, go look at some of the defensive end contracts that are out there and understand that's way down the ladder. And I think the Saints are really excited about the potential for what he can do over the next 2 years of that contract, and hopefully he's able to stay healthy, because when he's on the field, he's really tough to manage.
Jeff, we're at, you know, obviously the end of the season now, and much of the talk has been who's going to be back and who's not going to be for next season. Yeah. People talking about, you know, DeMario Davis, Cam Jordan, Taysom Hill, Alante Taylor, and another one for me, Alvin Kamara. I'm like stuck on this one. I don't know what the Saints should do, honestly. We know he's that, you know, the 29-year-old running back hitting that wall. He had a rough injury plague season, but I just wonder if they try to run it back again another year with Kellen Moore to see if AK can be that dude for them.
Yeah. I mean, what I can say confidently is he's not going to get traded. That's partially because he has no interest in playing anywhere else. He's said that multiple times. And, you know, I don't think he's holding the team hostage in the sense where if they say, hey, we're going to trade you, he would say, I'm not going. But why would any team trade for him knowing that that could be a potential issue? So it just wouldn't make sense. I don't think he's going to get cut. If you cut him, you're looking at $18 million in dead cap. So that just wouldn't make any sense. I think the question is, does Alvin still want to play? You know, and at this point, we haven't heard from him. You know, we talked to a lot of players in the locker room this week. during kind of clean-out day. He wasn't there during that time. So we haven't heard from him since pre-injury. We probably won't hear from him again unless he does like a podcast appearance or something until, you know, OTAs, minicamp. So it's a mystery. What I can say is I really like Devin Neal. I like Audric Estime. I like Kendre Miller. He just can't stay healthy. If Alvin is back, I think it'll be more of a timeshare than kind of a bell cow situation. Not unlike it was this year. They were already trying to do that this year with Kendre Miller, and Kendre just got hurt, and suddenly it was all on Alvin again. Mickey Loomis did say, like, part of the issue is they have not supported Alvin as much as they need to, you know, from either whether it's an offensive line perspective, whether it's the offense in general. And so I don't know. Like, I think the question is more, does Alvin still want to play, and what does he have left to offer? If he's playing next year, it's going to be for the Saints.
You mentioned if he's doing podcasts, he might as well stop by. We'll give him an open invite to the Inside Black and Gold podcast.
Yeah, why not?
And we on there, we do, you know, stock up and stock down all year after games. And if you had to pick like an unsung hero from this 2025 season, you know, maybe not the brightest star or the, you know, the biggest producer on offense or defense, but just somebody, you know, who kept the team together, things glued, and just did their job.
That's a lot of qualifiers.
sorry, didn't mean to stump you.
It's all right. You know, it's funny because there's a few guys who stand out, but I don't think anyone's taking DeMario Davis for granted. I don't think anyone's taking Cam Jordan for granted.
Right.
I'll give you Justin Reed, you know, and I think he does a lot of things that maybe flies under the radar. But I think people underestimate, like, look at that secondary. Look at the group of players you ran out there on a weekly basis. And understand that there was a rookie starting safety, a rookie starting outside corner, a second year starting outside corner, and then Alonte Taylor in the slot is in his fourth year. You know, you had Jordan Howden and Terrell Burgess worked in there. But, like, that's a lot of youth and a lot of guys who need to be led in the secondary. And Brandon Staley's system, I don't want to call it confusing, but you need to be able to communicate at a high level. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of disguising. And, you know, there's a reason they brought in Julian Blackman, and their goal was to play Justin Reed and Julian Blackman as the starting safeties, because it's a big ask for a rookie to go out there and handle that. And I think Justin had a big role in making sure that everything was copacetic on the back end. And you look at, okay, Brandon Staley's defense, it had its moments in the beginning of the season where you kind of wondered about it. You get to the end of the year, there's only one team in the NFL that did not allow a 100-yard receiver, and it was the Saints. You know, and that's a pretty big, you know, you let up one 70-yard catch, that goes away quick. You know, there weren't a ton of explosive plays allowed. And for a secondary that was relying on so much young talent, you got to give Justin a lot of credit for kind of holding that group together.
And last one for me, Jeff. You know, injuries are always a problem, but it seemed that at least this season, those soft tissue issues weren't as extreme as they had been in the past. So I think like the strength and conditioning staff did a pretty darn good job.
Yeah, it's always tough because, you know, you end up with impact injuries and like torn ligaments or whatever. And there's only so much you can do to prevent stuff like that. You know, some of it's just bad luck. You catch a helmet to the knee, you blow out your knee, and it's like nothing to do to prevent that. So I would expect them to kind of run it back similarly. I'm interested to see if they handle training camp any differently. It was a really low impact start to the camp. You know, you talk about OTAs and mini camp, and there was not a single set of 11 on the 11 drills, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Does that put you a little behind the curve? Maybe. Or is it just, hey, we have our offense installed now, so that even makes more sense this season? We'll have to see. I think they're satisfied with Ted Rath and his system. The injuries did pile up at the end of the year, but you always wonder late in the year, is it a scenario where you got guys who, if you were competing for the playoffs, would you be fighting through something? And in this scenario, it just doesn't make sense to do. I think there was probably a couple players who were kind of in that category of, if week 18 was to win the division, would they be on IR? I don't know. But I think the team is happy with how that all turned out, and you just hope for some good luck as you go forward.
Yeah, one thing for me, Jeff, talking about some of the things at training camp, I'm hoping Kellen maybe bumps up the times of practices. I think that might help the team get off to a faster start in games. I don't know.
Yeah, you think the sleeping in is the problem?
Yeah, I just want to get going earlier, so maybe get those juices flowing earlier practices.
I wouldn't hate it, but I think they do value the practices in the heat. So I don't think they're trying to avoid the heat. I think they see that as a good way to really kick off camp. And I would expect them to kind of operate similarly, maybe go out to California again. What's going to be weird for next season is I would not be surprised at all if the Saints end up in the Hall of Fame game with Drew. I don't want to count my chickens here, but the chicken's going to hatch going into the Hall of Fame. Like, that would impact, you know, that adds a fourth game back to the schedule. You're playing that preseason game before you even, like, know what the team looks like.
You're headed to camp,
so
maybe.
That might impact the schedule a little bit.
Jeff, always appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me during the Fiesta Bowl going on right now.
Yeah, no doubt. Y'all have a good one.
Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, also WWL digital content producer. You can check out all his great work. Go to WWL.com. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. The Miami Hurricanes just finding the end zone, extra point pending, and it is good. So the Canes taking the lead back again over Ole Miss 10-7. We're going to take a break right now, come back with more Sports Talk right after this on WWL.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. Tiger fans, we got our head coach, but who is Lane Kiffin recruiting or looking to land through the transfer portal for LSU football? You got to keep it locked on WWL for the latest on the Tigers' search for a new quarterback plus key portal transfer signings. We'll bring you breaking news when it happens on air, on social, and you can follow the LSU transfer portal tracker online at WWL.com. Also, listen to Sports Talk 4 o'clock starting every day, up-to-the-minute reports plus LSU insiders and expert analysis brought to you by the Spirit of First American, a banking tradition since 1910, and WWL. Looking at Lane's former team, the Ole Miss Rebels, they're trailing the Hurricanes 10-7 right now. We're about five and a half minutes till halftime here at the Fiesta Bowl. Looking at some of the numbers from this matchup so far, Trinidad Chambliss has 5 of 6 passing with 38 yards through the air. Did get negative 11 rushing yards so far, but with Carson Beck, he's got 10 of 14 passing, 82 yards. The Rebels right now in that three-point deficit, and they closed as three-point dogs, wasn't it, Charlie? We got it in, though, at 3.5.
3.5, so you and Mike have that little buffer.
Buffer, right.
Yeah, unfortunately for Bobby and I, we took Miami. There's still plenty of time.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Full, you know. 2.5 quarters still remaining in this game.
Yeah, I'm looking to rush home and putting this one on.
Kawan Lacy broke a free for a gigantic touchdown run.
I did happen to look up and saw him running free.
It was 70-plus yards.
Oof.
So that was the way that Ole Miss scored so far. Miami's defense has been awesome all year long, but specifically in the playoffs as well against Texas A&M and Ohio State. But Ole Miss and Trinidad Chambliss and this offense may be a little bit of a different animal. We'll see. I thought Vegas had the line set pretty high as far as the over-under total points for this game, Steve. But so far, I mean, halfway through the second quarter, we're already at 17, and Ole Miss is threatening. They're pretty deep in Miami territory right now.
Going to be heading to break. Want to give a quick shout-out, though. LSU women's basketball getting their first SEC victory of the season. Lady Tigers now 1-2 in conference play. They took down the Georgia Bulldogs 80-59, Flaje Johnson leading the Lady Tigers with 25 points there. So overall now the LSU women's basketball team 15-2 on the season, 1-2 in SEC play. Taking that break, coming back to close things out here on Sports Talk right after this on WWL, folks. Back here on Sports Talk as we close things out, folks, looking at the Fiesta Bowl going out right now. Things are tied up 10-10 between Miami and Ole Miss. Tomorrow, we got more college football action with more, unfortunately, on ESPN. It won't be on the airwaves here. But what are you feeling about tomorrow's game, Charlie?
I picked IU. I'm rolling with the Hoosiers. I think that I'm a little bit nervous about the play because I haven't picked Indiana this year, but they've burned me enough. I'm tired of picking against Coach Cignetti.
Also, NFL wildcard weekend starts Saturday. Rams-Panthers will have that for you, kicking off at 3:30, followed by Packers-Bears, 7 p.m. Sunday. Triple header, Bears-Jaguars, 49ers-Eagles, Chargers and Patriots. Then on Monday, Vikings at Rams. All the action from the NFL all weekend long right here on the home of the Saints and NFL WWL. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll be back tomorrow with Fans in the Pro. Stay tuned, folks, on WWL or right after this for the news break.